broadband internet service providers in Real Simple Syndication are proud to bring you
Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
And thank you for joining me for this episode of Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night. When I say me, I mean just me. It is Carlin, and Jordan's not here for this episode. I want to tell you why. Every year, I have in October an event for myself where I watch 31 horror films throughout the month. I don't watch one every single day because that's just, you know, life gets in the way. It's tough. But I watch 31 throughout the course of October. And I've done this. This is the third year I did it. And every year I write down what films I watched. This year I also wrote down the years of the films, and I decided to do an episode, special episode for our podcast, where I'm going to do like a 1 to 2 minute what I thought of the films for everyone for each of these 31 films, just to keep it kind of brief. I'm going to tell you whether I would recommend them or I wouldn't. I'm going to give you the year, and the reason I'm going to give you the year is there are remakes that are done from time to time, or sometimes there are just movies that have the same name or close to the same name, so the year might help you identify. Not going to go into a whole lot of stuff about, you know, who's in the film, who directed it, all that. If it pops into my mind, I will say something about that, like anyone who is memorable or anything like that. So let's see how this goes, because I'm flying solo and I'm doing it in one take, so bear with me if I'm stumbling or anything like that. But kicking off, the first movie I watched, oh, and by the way, these are actually in the actual order I watched them throughout the course of October. So if you hear any of the films on here, by the way, that you have interest in, I would definitely recommend getting Netflix if you don't have it. Put them all in there. A lot of them are available on Netflix Instant. Some of them are not, but I think the overwhelming majority actually are. So anyway, first one, The House on Haunted Hill. This was the 1959 version, which is the original. This one had Vincent Price in it, and I'm a big fan of Vincent Price. Anybody who's, you know, seen any Vincent Price material knows his acting is very good, and he has this certain creepiness to him that just permeates every film he's in, and that's perfect for horror films. House on Haunted Hill is just a nice film that has a cool story. The other thing about it is that it's the effects that they used for the haunting of this mansion that they're staying in, a bunch of people are staying in. The haunting effects that they did were really good for the time, so that was pretty impressive. But it's just a story that's really well written, and the directing was well done with it, and you know, Vincent Price, anytime he's on the screen, awesome, awesome time. So that was the 1959 House on Haunted Hill. Excuse me, take a drink. Sorry about that. The next one I watched was the 2013 offering, The Sacrament. I believe this was done by like Adam Wingard, I think was one. Either Adam Wingard or Ty West. Can't remember, but that crew, they all kind of run together, those guys. This one was a film that was kind of like a riff on the Jonestown murders, you know, with Jim Jones, who was a cult leader who basically talked people into, as you say, drink the Kool-Aid with poison in it, and they all killed themselves. So this is a take on that type of story, where it's like a found footage thing where these guys are documenting the whole time. This one, there were some kind of interesting elements about it, but I would honestly say overall, I didn't really enjoy it because it was a little too long. Their ability to work the cameras into always recording got a little tiresome. I felt like it was kind of stretching a little bit, that people would just continue filming and filming and filming when they're in these pretty terrible situations, being chased and all that stuff. But that just didn't really sit with me too well. It's just not the most compelling film. It's a good idea. I just wish it was executed a little bit better. So I would not recommend The Sacrament. I'd forgotten to say on House on Haunted Hill, but you can probably tell I would recommend The House on Haunted Hill, the 1959 version. The third film I watched was Galaxy of Terror, which was a 1981 offering. I was very surprised to see that Robert Englund was in this film. And I had not really seen him outside of anything but the Nightmare on Elm Street. So it was really cool to see him in a different role. He was much younger at that point, and He did a good job in it. Also, Sid Haig was in it. You know, anyone who's big into horror knows who Sid Haig is. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in a lot of blaxploitation films as well, from like the 70s. Galaxy of Terror is kind of hokey-ish. It's set in space, and there are monsters. This one's a real tough one for me. I kind of feel like I'm in the middle, because the hokiness of the story's not all that compelling, but the monsters are cool, and and it's kind of like a, you never know when they're going to pop out. There could be something around every corner type ordeal, which is kind of fun. But I think if I have to commit one way or the other, I would actually say I'm not recommending Galaxy of Terror. But if you like what you heard, you know, Robert Englund said, hey, go ahead and check it out yourself. You have every right to do so, obviously. The next film I watched was called Wishmaster. This was a 1997 film, and this, surprisingly enough, also had Robert Englund in it. I was pretty surprised. I was like, oh, two Robert Englund films in a row. And I had no idea going into it. This one's basically about a genie that gets released, and then, oh, people be careful about how you wish for things, because the genies want to take it literally and kill people and make terrible things happen to everyone. So just know that. It's a lot better done than I thought it was going to be. The film played pretty well. The story was solid enough, because you know going into it, it's not going to be anything like groundbreaking or new. Like, you know the story of people making wishes and they go terribly wrong. It's the same old thing. But the effects were really good. The makeup was well done. There's some gore in it that was pretty well done. The kill scenes are more like inventive type things. So the wish master in it kind of keeps you guessing as to how he's going to screw people over with their wishes. And I think that kind of drives the film, in my opinion, to make it pretty interesting. So based on that, I would say I would recommend The Wishmaster. The next one I watched was called Rites of Spring. This was a 2011 offering, also from the crew of like Adam Wingard, Ty West. I forget which one directed it. This one was kind of interesting. It had some people kind of stranded on this. They were abducted and then stranded on a old farm. And the whole premise is they have these rites of spring where, you know, this old guy has the rites of spring. He has to sacrifice somebody so this, you know, creature won't get out. A little convoluted, honestly, and the whole creature thing was really kind of came out of nowhere and was kind of for no reason. And your typical thing, people just running, don't do that. That's the most stupid thing you can do. Okay, that's exactly what they did. You know, that kind of thing. It's decent amount of shaky cam with it, too. Honestly, I would say I really don't want to recommend this film, Rites of Spring, because kind of like The Sacrament, it just kind of is, it's a little too long and there's a little less plot, less story to it. And you really want more when you're doing that, when you're watching one of these films. So I would say no go on Rites of Spring. So the next film I watched was one, probably the oldest horror film I've ever watched. It's from 1932 called White Zombie. Now, this one, it's black and white, obviously, because 1932, they didn't have color back then for film. You need to keep in mind what year it was when you're watching it. They're not going to have crazy awesome effects. It's not going to be real awesome with action or anything like that. But for the time, I think it was a well-done film. And I believe this was the first time that zombies were ever mentioned in film. So it's also, you know, horror historically important for that reason. It's basically about a guy who, you know, loses his woman is the main crux of it, and she becomes a zombie, and there are zombies all around because there's a devious guy who's trying to, you know, have a zombie horde, basically, of people working for him. There are some really cool scenes, like one in particular where one of the zombies kind of accidentally throws himself into some sort of grinding machine. I felt for that year, that was pretty graphic. I mean, they didn't like show it right up front, like close up, but how they alluded to it and how they played the scene was more graphic than I thought they would have done back in 1932. So I was pretty impressed by that. overall good story. I think because it's a good story, and if you're watching it with the right year in mind, and its historical importance, basically, I would recommend White Zombie for anyone out there. And that one is on Netflix streaming, at least as of this recording. The next one after that, I watched The Blair Witch Project from 1999, one I had not seen before, believe it or not. I know everyone out there is probably like, you've never seen The Blair Witch Project? Because everyone saw it back in the day. I just hadn't seen it. I know this is an important film because it really started up the whole ordeal with the found footage type film for horror. And so for that reason, I'm glad the film happened because it has spawned some other great ideas and some other great films. I didn't like this film, though. The Blair Witch Project, I thought, was pretty terrible. It was way too long. Everything was very drawn out. They just took the found footage thing too literally and kind of played it more as like, if you're the person who found the footage and you didn't edit it or anything and to present it to people, this is what it looks like. You know, it's just, it's mundane and it plods along. And the other thing is the banter between all of the actors in there is very tiresome. There's a lot of profanity just thrown back and forth. And it's just a whole lot of them yelling at each other and yelling profanity at each other, being pissed off. And it really just gets tired very fast. The ending is a little bit scary, a little bit interesting, but it's not nearly enough to save the whole film. So no recommendation for The Blair Witch Project. Do not see it. The next one after that I saw was a movie called Vamp from 1986. This film was very fun. This is one of those kind of horror comedy films. Very 80s vibe to it. You just get that feel from the storyline. You get that feel, obviously from the clothes that you're seeing in it. But Vamp was a lot of fun, about some college kids. You know, they get into a crazy night, they go to a strip club. Oh, where's the strip club? It's on the vampire part of town. So they run into vampires, you know, yada, yada, yada. But there's a whole lot of comedy littered throughout the film. And the storyline doesn't necessarily go where you think it's going to go in the end. And I was very happy with that as well. So I would say that I would definitely recommend Vamp. It is super fun for anyone who likes comedy with mixed in with their horror. The movie after that I watched was a 1993 offering called Leprechaun. I know a lot of people are familiar with Leprechaun. This was actually a very early film for Jennifer Aniston. She was in it. So it's really funny to look at this film and see how young Jennifer Aniston is in it and be like, wow, you know, that's crazy. Look at her now and look at her then. The acting in it is not so hot, as you can probably imagine. The premise is absurd. Basically, a leprechaun's gold has been stolen by someone, and then he wants to kill anyone who takes any piece of his gold. The story is so hokey, and the acting's bad, and the way everything plays out is just, you know, it's kind of like one of those movies that it's so ridiculous that it's kind of good, but having seen it and needing to pass a judgment on whether I would actually recommend it or not, I would say that if you feel like you're in the mood for something bad that you think you could just have a few beers with buddies and make fun of, maybe. But if I'm saying a definitive watch it or don't watch it, I'm not going to recommend Leprechaun to you. Sorry. The next film after that I watched was the 2013 film Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. And this was one that had Jeremy Renner in it. It was like an action-style film of this, you know, Jeremy's character and his sister who, you know, had run afoul of witches when they were young, and then they go on to become career witch hunters, so they just go around and there's a bunch of cool action scenes of killing witches and blah, 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 blah. Not a whole lot to the actual plot. In fact, there's a lot of tired moments in the film, but if you want to see just straight-up action with witches, this could be a good film for you. I wasn't a big fan of it. I felt like there was not a whole lot of merit to it, and I was kind of scratching my head as to why Jeremy Renner had done it. I feel like in 2013, he had already made a name for himself, so he should have been okay to say no to that. He wouldn't be needing the money, but I don't know, maybe they offered him a ridiculous sum, maybe he did it for a friend, maybe it was part of something contractual that he had to do, because I know sometimes they'll, you know, do contracts with actors where they're saying, hey, you know, you just do X number of films for us. So maybe he was just trying to satisfy one of those. I don't know. But Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, do not see it. I thought it was terrible. The one I watched after that that picked me up, and it was actually in the same day, was the 2013 film Big Ass Spider. Now, this sounds ridiculous, and there is an exclamation point at the end of the title, Big Ass Spider. It sounds ridiculous, it looks ridiculous, but it was very well put together, in my opinion. This is a perfect example of what something like Snakes on a Plane should have been. It was trying to be absurd, and I thought Snakes on a Plane totally missed with that because it wasn't funny enough. It didn't poke enough fun at itself. Big Ass Spider definitely pokes enough fun at itself. It is very witty. A lot of the humor plays very well. And because it's supposed to be that type of film, the low budget stuff really doesn't matter. And the kind of bad acting from time to time also doesn't really matter. But I feel like the main guy in this, who was also in the show, he played Parkman in the show Heroes. He really brought his A-game to the role, and his role was very funny. He was a exterminator. Also, I was kind of impressed with the CGI for the, you know, named big-ass spider in the film. So this one, actually, believe it or not, is a recommend for me. I would definitely tell everyone to check out Big-Ass Spider. It's very funny, and you'd be surprised. The film after that I watched was The Serpent and the Rainbow. It was a 1988 film. I had Bill Pullman in it, and this one's about zombies in a sense, but zombies having to do with voodoo. And it's about a guy who's basically going to research, you know, drugs in a tropical climate for some pharmaceutical firm. And he hears about, you know, people who are able to concoct something that'll turn people into zombies. So then he wants to figure out, you know, how to get his hands on it. And then there's a revolution on the verge in this country that he's in. And, you know, there are people who are very sensitive to him being there, and he crosses the wrong people, so he ends up in danger. Very interesting film. It's a very different take on the whole zombie ordeal, because typically zombies are coming out of, you know, something else, some sort of like nuclear something or biological, you know, as far as diseases, things like that. But this is like voodoo based, and you don't see a whole lot of voodoo zombie movies. I thought Bill Pullman did a really good job. It's definitely a very 80s film, but I think it holds up quite well. So The Serpent and the Rainbow, that is a recommend for me. The next one I did watch was The House of the Devil from 2009, but we already did a review of The House of the Devil, its own one-hour show, so go check that out. I did watch it during the month, so, you know, it counts. So go and check out The House of the Devil. I think it was a good episode that we did. Well, I mean, all of our episodes are good, in my opinion. So, the one after that I watched was a 1975 film called Shivers. This was a film by David Cronenberg, one of his very early films. And this one focuses, obviously, if you know Cronenberg, on body horror type stuff, specifically about sexually transmitted diseases and, you know, sexuality in general and being, like, overly sexual. The premise is very interesting. It's basically about this, these people who create this kind of parasite that they feel can live inside someone's body and make up for missing organs and have, you know, you with this parasite, you have kind of a symbiotic relationship, but things obviously go wrong and then they are sexually transmitted. And then when people have them, they're just like crazed sex maniacs. And so it's set in like this one apartment complex or I don't know if it's some sort of like, I think it's some sort of special living community. And people are just like all going sexually crazy and they're transmitting this to each other. And people are, you know, running away from it and, you know, no one gets away, you know, that kind of thing. But Shivers, very interesting concept. I think it holds up pretty well, honestly. It's not David Cronenberg's best stuff, but it is good stuff by him. So I would say it's a recommend for me for Shivers. The next film after Shivers I watched was Barren Blood. Now, Barren Blood is one that we also did a full one-hour episode for, so you can go back and check that out. Definitely listen to it. That one was a stinker. That was a 1972 Mario Bava film, but yeah, But definitely listen to the review of it, because even if you haven't seen it or don't want to see it, we say some funny things about it and we give you the whole gist. So our episodes stand on their own, whether you see the films or not, honestly. So check out the Baron Blood one, and as I said before, the House of the Devil one. The next film I watched after that was the 2013 film Insidious Chapter 2. Now, this was a film that was created by James Wan and Lee Whannell, and they were the ones who originally created the first Saw film. And I think they were involved to some degree with 1 through 3 of the Saw films, and then they kind of dropped out. Insidious Chapter 2 obviously is a sequel to Insidious Chapter 1, which I wasn't a huge fan of. There were some good scares in that one, but I felt overall the story wasn't all that great. In Chapter 2, I think the story really has picked up. It's gotten a lot better, and those scares that they had in the first one are still there. So the good stuff from the first film are still present in the second film, and the actual script and the storyline is better. So honestly, and Rose Byrne is in it. I know one of the main guy, I always forget his name, but the acting in it is very well done in my opinion. And it's a pretty good haunted house film. I don't think there are all that many good haunted house films out there. So for that reason, I think I would actually go ahead and recommend Insidious Chapter 2 to people. And I knew they are going to be making an Insidious Chapter 3. So I'm hoping that it stays along this line where they keep improving, because, like I said, I wasn't a huge fan of the first one. But the second one got me kind of interested enough that I'm kind of looking forward to the third chapter. So, awesome. The film, so a recommend, obviously. The film after that I watched was the 1973 film The Legend of Hell House. Now, anyone watching this film, and it was the case for me, you start recognizing as you're watching it, there was a lot from this film taken for the movie Scary Movie 2. Wait, was it the second one? Yeah, actually the second one. Scary Movie 2, that was done by the Wayans brothers, which I would recommend, but I didn't watch for this past October. That's just a side thing. But they took a lot from The Legend of Hell House. Legend of Hell House is interesting. The premise is basically about people going into this haunted house, trying to do research. It's a whole team of them, and all the terrible, spooky, scary things that happen while they're there. There is a good ending to it, too. There's something else in the house. I don't really want to spoil that, but there is something else in the house that you wouldn't necessarily expect. I think the scares are handled very well in this film. The acting is very well done. It does drag a little bit at times, but I think overall the story's strong enough and the scares are good enough. And the twist at the end is good enough that I can go ahead and say that I will recommend the 1973 version of The Legend of Hell House. So that's a good one. After that, I actually saw, believe it or not, for the first time, the 1968 film Night of the Living Dead by George A. Romero. Now, this is a very important film, you know, historically horror film speaking, because, as we all know, George A. Romero is synonymous with zombies. Night of the Living Dead was the first zombie film that really popularized zombies, so it's crazy that I hadn't seen it for so long, and I'd run into so many people who were like, have you seen Night of the Living Dead? And I'm like, no, and they're like, what? You've seen all these horror films, and you haven't seen Night of the Living Dead? It's a staple. So I was like, okay. So I went ahead, I made sure I did it this time around. Good film. Black and white, obviously. The budget was so very low. Romero shot it for extremely low amount of money. And you can tell from it. Some of the acting is a little stilted in it. And the, I don't know, the film just, like, some of the effects and the way that the cuts are made and the edits for the film seem pretty amateur. His films, obviously, if you watch his whole catalog, get much, much better as time goes on. And this was really the first big one. So because of its historical importance, I'm very glad that I saw it. There's some really good things in there. Like, there's a very strong African-American lead in this film, and that was a very big thing for back in 1968. And there were a lot of undertones in the film of, like, racial tensions at the time. So for that reason, and for the reason that it's a very important film historically, And you got to think in the context, this was the very first zombie film. So keep that in mind if you watch it, that this is how really a lot of the zombie information that we have today was originated. You know, George A. Romero started from basically nothing and built his own, race of zombies. So, interesting film, important film. I would recommend Night of the Living Dead. Next film I watched was a 1980 offering called Prom Night. Now, this was a Canadian slasher film. It has a young Jamie Lee Curtis in it, and it's basically things go awry when kids were young, they grow up, they're in high school. Oh, all of a sudden someone's running around killing people. Why is that happening? I don't know. So it's kind of like this, who's the killer? And you're doing all this guessing because they're trying to throw red herrings at you of, okay, maybe it's this person, maybe it's this person. They want you to keep guessing. The kill scenes were pretty well handled, in my opinion. The film overall was pretty well handled. It just has a kind of cool, fun feel to it. And, I didn't see anything wrong with the film. I don't think it's like phenomenal by any stretch of the imagination. Is it one that I think I'd necessarily watch again? Maybe if I'm in the right mood. But am I glad that I watched it once? Definitely. I've heard a lot about it. I subscribe to a magazine called Rue Morgue Magazine, which is done out of Canada, and they refer to Prom Night all the time. So for that reason, it is one that I wanted to see because I wanted to kind of know the references to it. But the ending is interesting with their twist. I don't think it's like the most amazing slasher twist or anything, but solid enough. I would go ahead and say I do recommend the 1980 film Prom Night. So good. The next film after that I watched was George A. Romero's second installment zombie film. Oh no, I don't think this was the second one. I'm sorry. I believe Dawn of the Dead was before this, but 1985's Day of the Dead is what I watched of his. This I liked significantly more than Night of the Living Dead. A very interesting story behind it, and very cool to just kind of see the setting that he chose. It's basically in a underground military bunker where obviously the zombie apocalypse is happening, and all these military folks are trying to survive. They're doing tests on zombies, and this the really cool thing is this doctor is doing a test, finding out that zombies can kind of rebond to humanity and interact with humans and not eat them in some instances. But obviously, things go awry at some point, and there's much gut munching by zombies, and things go terribly, terribly wrong because it wouldn't be a George A. Romero zombie film if that didn't happen, right? I really enjoyed the story behind this. It was very thought-provoking. I thought it was very fresh and interesting. Even nowadays, I think this is a fresh, interesting take. So to have been done in 1985 and really be holding up, almost, 20 years, no, I'm sorry, almost close to 30 years later, that's crazy. Good film, good film. So obviously, I definitely recommend Day of the Dead. The next film I watched after that was VHS 2. It was from 2013. I had seen the original VHS. These films are kind of numerous directors get together and they each do a small clip, and they're self-contained horror films that are like the found footage type horror films. And they're all kind of put together by some loose story, which the story that glues them all together is, in the first one and the second one, not good. It doesn't really matter. It's kind of dumb, but you just have to look for what's good. Eduardo Sanchez, I believe, had done one of the films in it. He was one of the directors of the Blair Witch Project, and his was good. It was a zombie film, very interesting. Basically, a guy who wasn't a zombie wearing a GoPro camera on his head, who's doing some mountain biking, and then he gets turned into a zombie, and then it's seeing the outbreak of a zombie infection through this GoPro on a zombie's head was a really interesting take. Very cool, very funny at times. Super interesting. I thought that was a great one. There was also a alien abduction one that I don't remember who directed that one, but it was pretty well done. The creepiness factor was really good. The tension building was extremely well done. It played well. So really, I only liked two of the stories. I think there were like five stories total. So I don't know. I think overall, just for those two stories that I did like, I think I would go ahead and recommend VHS 2. And the first VHS is kind of the same thing. There might be like two that were good. I can't really fully remember. It's been years since I watched that one. Probably about two. So I would recommend VHS 2 just for the two that I talked about. The next film after that I watched was The Town That Dreaded Sundown, and that was in 1976. It came up under the horror genre on Netflix Instant, but I kind of don't feel like it. I mean, there are horror elements to it, but it's not very horror, in my opinion. It's more of like a crime, drama, thriller type thing. Basically, a masked guy who's going around killing people in this town. And they obviously from the name, they are dreading sundown because that's when he's going around killing people. And it's just kind of like the police chasing this guy. Some of the acting, not so hot. This is definitely one of those films that doesn't really stand up over time. I don't know, it may have been really good back in 1976, but it's not doing so hot now. Even if it was back in 1976, I don't think I would have had all that much interest in it. The story's just kind of blah. I've seen stuff like it before. I don't think it was cutting edge back then. So for all these reasons, I would say not recommend The Town That Dreaded Sundown. So there you go. The next one I watched after that was a 1992 film by the name of Candyman. Now, Candyman, if anybody knows, was a big deal when it came out. A lot of people around my age, I'm in my 30s, will remember Candyman if they saw it when they were younger. This is also another film where it was very scary and very well done back then, but it doesn't really hold up all that well over time. The source material was from Clive Barker for this film, which I thought was really awesome. Always a Clive Barker fan. So the whole premise behind it, the source material is really good. Basically about this guy with a hook for a hand who like can breathe out bees. And the whole backstory. I mean, you can watch the film, but the whole backstory behind it. There's a lot of good tension building in it. But overall, I don't know. I feel like there's just not enough in the film for me to be all that interested in watching it again. Am I glad I watched it once? Yes, just to know what it's like, and I want to support it because, you know, I do like Clive Barker and his writing. We did a review of Hellraiser, so, you know, check out that episode as well. That was a fun one. And certainly a better film, in my opinion, than the Candyman film. But it was okay. There are certain people that I think would enjoy it. Obviously, Tony Todd, who plays the character of Candyman, the bad guy, a lot of people will recognize him. He's been in other horror stuff. But he's very well known for being Candyman, and he's got that great deep voice that's very menacing and evil. So that is a cool thing about it. But overall, I would say I'm not going to recommend Candyman. But if you like what you heard, go ahead and watch it. The film I watched after that was a 2012 offering called Cockneys versus Zombies. And Cockneys, if anyone doesn't know, are people who speak kind of like this weird kind of slang British in the UK. Actually, I don't know. I think it is British, but it referred to as like slang English for the United Kingdom. Funny type language things that they play around with in the script. This was a fresh take on a more recent zombie film, in my opinion, and there are a lot out there that are very, very unoriginal. So Cockneys versus Zombies ended up being a really big surprise for me. It was recommended by Jordan. He, you know, always recommends good stuff to me, typically, unless it's a movie like Only God Forgives, which I'm never going to forgive him for that one. But he was dead on with Cockneys versus Zombies. Basically, what happens is you're seeing two things go on at once. You're watching a bunch of youngsters, probably no older than like low 20s, trying to rob a bank, and then they get lucky because right when they get caught, a zombie apocalypse happens. Well, then they got to deal with the zombie apocalypse and killing the zombies. But there's a whole lot of comedy written into the script that not only makes it funny, but it helps drive the actual story behind it. And then on the other side, you're also watching these elderly people at an old folks' home battle the zombie apocalypse on their end. And they do pretty well at it, and there are a lot of really funny moments. One of my favorites, which it won't spoil it by telling you, because it's still going to be hilarious, is when one of the older gentlemen falls asleep on a lawn chair outside while the zombie apocalypse happens. All the zombies just think that he's dead, but he's not. So he needs to try to run to get back into the building, and he's got a walker, and he's old. So he can only move so fast, and there's a really hilarious scene where he's moving slowly with his walker, and there's a zombie who's also walking extremely slow right behind him, and they're going ridiculously slow, but the zombie's just not gaining on him because zombies are slow. Really good film, very witty, very well done. I like it a lot. It's a super fresh take on a zombie film, and that's always welcome for me because zombie films have gotten very tired. So Cockneys versus Zombies, definite recommend for me. The next film I watched was a 1974 film called Madhouse. Now, this movie was great just for the reason that it has Vincent Price and Peter Cushing together in it. I believe this was an Amicus, I think is the studio, did a lot of horror films back in like the 70s. I think Amicus had done it. And the premise of the film is pretty cool. It's basically an actor who ended up having a psychotic episode, supposedly, where he killed his, well, beheaded his fiance. And then he, you know, gets locked away for a while and comes back, and he's supposed to reprise himself as this role that he apparently got way too wrapped up in when he committed, you know, the actual murder, this role of Dr. Death. And so he's going back into this role, so it's kind of like, oh, is he going to go crazy again, and is he going to start killing people? And, you know, people start dying, but it's like, is he the one killing people? Was he crazy all along? It's kind of that story. There are a lot of good horror elements to it, some good death scenes, and, I mean, Vincent Price is Vincent Price in it. He's awesome. He's great. Peter Cushing is Peter Cushing. He does such a really good job, and to see those guys together working in a film is just very, very cool. The makeup, too, for this film was really well done. A lot of the visual effects, practical effects, were really good. Overall, I would say I definitely would recommend Madhouse. Very cool. If for nothing else, then you see Vincent Price and Peter Cushing together. Super cool. The next film I watched was a 2012 film called Aftershock. Now, this was one of those Eli Roth Presents films. And I'm a big fan of Eli Roth. I really liked Cabin Fever when it came out. I liked Hostel 1 and Hostel 2. He's got a new film that's supposed to be coming out at some point, but it's hit a few roadblocks, called The Green Inferno, which is like a cannibal Holocaust type film with cannibalism in the Amazon. It's supposed to be really good. I'd be interested to see that. Just been a big fan of Eli Roth for a while. He's a typical person who had been a horror fanboy for so long, and then he happened to get his break, and he's still just a fanboy, but he's making films. So I always like to support him. He's an actor in Aftershock, and he did like a Presents thing for it. Overall, there are some interesting things about the film. It's not horror as you think it's going to be. This horror is natural. It's like a natural disaster thing where like a giant earthquake hits when some guys are out partying and the country of Chile, and things go crazy, buildings are falling apart, things falling on people, killing them, and, you know, it's about the craziness that ensues after all hell breaks loose because of a natural disaster. Then there are some elements of like, oh, now the criminals come out, and they're trying to kill people, and blah, blah, blah. For that reason, it's kind of original, but I just feel like maybe it could have been put together a lot better. I wasn't too interested in it. Honestly, it had a bit of a hard time keeping my attention. Eli Roth, I like to see him on the screen, and he does some good comedic acting, but overall acting, I don't think he's like the best actor. And there were a few decent actors in it, but overall, I don't know. I'd say Aftershock is an one I can't recommend to anyone. You're not really missing much, in my opinion. There was some decent gore in it, though. The next movie I watched after that was a 1960 film called Black Sunday. Now, this was a Mario Bava film as well. I had mentioned we had reviewed Baron Blood for its own episode, and it was not a good film, and that was a Mario Bava film. But I had heard so many great things about Mario Bava. He had done a bunch of Giallo films, which, you know, kind of, he started that whole movement, and then that movement informed the American and Canadian slasher films. So it, you know, his work is important for that reason. So I wanted to give him more of a chance. So I watched Black Sunday. Black Sunday is significantly better than Baron Blood. The story is good, is really good, very interesting. Basically, having to do with witches, you don't really see a whole lot of films about witches. And these witches who are trying to come back from the dead and exact revenge on people and just in general be evil. It's a black and white film, as you could probably guess, because it's from 1960. The camera work is really good in it. They did a great job of using like this cool, creepy mansion set that has all these secret passages. And that's kind of one of the really fun things about it is, you know, seeing all these new secret passages, like who's going to pop through where at any moment. It plays really well. It's a good film, and the story is compelling enough with the witches coming back to life and wreaking havoc. I quite enjoyed it, and the cinematography was very, very nice. So I would definitely recommend Black Sunday to everyone. This is a good Mario Bava film. The film I watched after that was called Almost Human from 2013. Almost Human was an independent film, very low budget, and it looks very low budget. Not that there's a problem with that, because I like low-budget independent films. This one, though, the script wasn't really there for me. The practical effects were good, and the gore was really well handled, and I would say kudos to the filmmakers for that. But the story is where you need to start, in my opinion. This is an alien abduction film, and, you know, it really doesn't do much of anything new for alien abduction or interesting. It's kind of a guy gets abducted by aliens. He's basically, his body's taken over by aliens. Then he's trying to go around and start a new population of aliens. I mean, it's kind of just fueled by the killing, and they try to act like the, you know, there's something shocking and interesting about the motive behind what this alien's trying to do, and it's not. I found myself losing interest quite a bit in this film. It drags. It's, you know, there just aren't a whole lot of interesting things thrown into the script. So that should have been worked on a lot more. So obviously, I am going to say not recommend Almost Human. The next film after that I watched was A Bay of Blood. This was a 1971 film, also a Mario Bava film, which I had heard was good, and yes, it was a good film. This one was actually in color to stand in contrast to Black Sunday. I liked Black Sunday more than A Bay of Blood, but A Bay of Blood was cool. The story behind it was basically some people going away to a vacation house, and they're all potentially going to inherit some property, because you see in the beginnings, two people get killed who were rich. They own the property. So then you have all these people could potentially inherit it. Well, then people start getting killed, getting off. And it's like, who's killing these people? It's probably someone who's trying to, you know, have sole ownership of the inheritance. So it's that interesting kind of like whodunit film. It is very Giallo-esque. You can see, you know, why everyone says that Mario Bava like started Giallo, and how slasher films kind of morphed out of that. Bay of Blood's a good example. Overall, a good film. The death scenes were good. The cinematography was handled well. The story is pretty cool. Except at the end, honestly, I'm not going to ruin it for anyone, but there's, in my opinion, a really stupid thing that they tack on to the end. I feel like the film would have been better without it. It's kind of like a out of left field, what the hell type thing, which I will draw a parallel to the second Hostel film that has a very kind of left field thing happen at the end of it. But I think that was actually kind of fun and funny. In this instance, for A Bay of Blood, it was just kind of like stupid and tacked on. But other than that, a good film, and I would definitely recommend A Bay of Blood. The second to last film, yeah, we're almost done here. I don't want to keep you guys for a full hour. Plus, I'm getting tired. I mean, speaking on my own, it's tough. It's making me appreciate Jordan even more. Jordan, I appreciate you, and I forgive you now for only God forgives. The second to last film I watched was another interesting zombie film from 2006. It's called Fido. Now, this one creates it's like an alternate kind of like 1950s reality in the United States where a zombie apocalypse happened. They were able to quell it, and then there's a company that came in and figured out how to control zombies and basically make them servants. So there's then that moral dilemma that comes up of, oh, well, they're kind of people, but they're not people, so is it bad to be making them servants to everyone? I don't know. But there's a lot of comedy written into the script, and it's not in there inappropriately to the point where it would, like, mess up the storyline, because the storyline is compelling and interesting and cool, and the comedy is just that icing on the cake to drive it. Very cool. Acting was very well done in it. I don't think there are any, like, name actors that I can think of. I can't even think of his name, but he was the guy who was in, actually, the last film I'll talk about called Trick or Treat, but he was also in the movie Happiness, if anyone saw Happiness. Sorry, I don't have his name at the moment. But Fido, very cool, very interesting. I also really like the kind of, like, take on alternate time period things, like take an actual time period that happened, make it look exactly like that, and everything is the same except you change like one thing. It's kind of like Sense and Sensibility in zombies, you know, that kind of ordeal. So for that reason, Fido really works well for that, and the fact that the comedy aspect is very well pulled off. So I would say a recommend for Fido. And the final film I watched is a horror film that I end every October with. I do Halloween night. I drink a beer while I hand out candy to the kids. And then after that, my wife and I watch this movie, Trick or Treat, which is from 2007. Now, this is actually a film that had been held on to for a while. It was made in 2007, but it wasn't released until 2009 because there are child deaths in it. And for that reason, they held it for 2 years because they didn't know what to do with it. They were originally going to give it a theatrical release and then decided not to do that because of the child death thing might be too controversial. So it sat on the shelf for 2 years and then just got a straight to DVD release. This movie is awesome. I love Trick or Treat. That's the reason that I watch it every October, and it's my final film to cap it off. It's perfect for Halloween night too, because based on the name, it's called Trick or Treat. It is about Halloween night, and there is some trick-or-treating that goes on a little bit, but this one is another one that's kind of, it's four different stories, but the stories are actually woven together, and the great thing about it is the film lends itself very much to watching it more than once, watching it several times, and you just keep, like, catching interesting little things in how the stories overlap, but you just didn't see it before, because there'll be, like, very small things, and you'll be like, oh, I didn't see that before, this is from that other story, because they run kind of concurrently, and they all kind of mix together. Very cool, very well done. The only really big name in the film, I think, is Anna Paquin, and this was pre True Blood, which I think is a terrible show. No one should ever watch True Blood. Awful. Terribly written, terribly executed. Never watch it. I got fooled into season one, and then I got fooled into season two after I said I wasn't going to do it. And then I stopped because I was so bitter. But anyway, Trick or Treat, she did a good job in Trick or Treat. It was an awesome film. Very Halloween-y. There's this character that weaves through all the stories called Sam. And it's a child actor who has like a burlap sack on his head, and he has a bucket of candy, and the candy's used for killing people because, you know, he'll like take a lollipop and he'll bite it off and it comes out all jagged and he can use that to cut people with. And it's just so good. All the stories are compelling. The one storyline that I thought I was going to dislike the most was actually the one I love the most, which is the one that Anna Paquin does. And if you watch it, you will know why. I feel like it's so well pulled off. The film is slick. It looks great. The music's well done. I mean, I can't say anything bad about the film, honestly. Sure, it's not the most amazing film I've ever seen, but in my opinion, when it comes to Halloween or horror-related films, this is one of the best. For me, it's my preference. So anyway, Trick or Treat is a definite recommend in case you couldn't figure that one out. So that's it. That's all 31 films. I feel exhausted. I don't know if you guys feel exhausted from just listening to me talk about them. I didn't know if I was going to make it. About halfway through, I was like, oh my God, am I going to fall on my face? I do apologize for any kind of stumbles, misspeaks, stuff like that. It's not easy to do this in one shot, and I did. I didn't edit anything. I didn't stop and start recording again. Maybe this will be something we'll do every year. Give us a little bit of feedback about it. If it's favorable, if you want it, if we hear from enough people who say, hey, you know, I want Carlin to do a quick run through of his 31 horror films in November from October every year, we can certainly do that. If you want to go the other way and you want to send us an email and say, I really didn't like it, it didn't come off well, it was stupid, I don't want to hear 1 to 2 minutes about a film, you can certainly do that. You can send us emails at mostexcellentmovienight@gmail.com. Also, just check out our stuff, you know, check out our website, mostexcellentmovienight.com. But thank you so much for listening to this episode. Kind of sad I had to do it without Jordan, but I mean, it makes sense. He would have just sat there and stared at me the whole time anyway, because these were just the films that I watched. But hey, I love horror films. There were a lot I said I don't recommend, but I'm not upset that I watched them at least once. And that's the thing. If you like a genre, you're willing to check everything out just once. And I would recommend everyone out there who's listening, you know, just watch as much as you can. If you have one genre that you really love, watch everything at least once. And then you'll be able to root out what you really, really love. Anyway, go find some interesting films. Feel free to drop us a line. Ask us to review them as well. And maybe we'll do that. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. Go check out a flick.
You've been listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Our theme music was provided by Sweet Wave Audio. To find more royalty-free music for your own projects, check out sweetwaveaudio.co.uk.
And special thanks to Ariana Ramos for her graphic design savvy helping us with our album art.
Visit our website at mostexcellentmovienight.com to listen to other episodes, give us your opinion, and share with us other movies you'd like to have reviewed.
You can also contact us through our email address, mostexcellentmovienight@gmail.com. We would love to read them on the air.
Also, if you could rate and review the podcast on iTunes, we would be your friends for life.
For sure. That's all for now. Thanks for listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night,
where movies are most excellent.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.